a number of House Republicans were saying, oh, don't do this, cut this green thing or that green thing. I got to go right away. And again, Trump has the authority now, the best it's ever been, but it doesn't last forever in the political world. So do it while, as they say, the iron is hot. Get as much of that stuff as you can.
Is about more than just a regular gym routine. When was the last time you checked on your financial fitness? If you're feeling like you're falling behind, Ed Sedell is here to help with The Retirement Trainer, a podcast about helping you get into better financial shape. Every week, Ed talks about things you need to know to become more financially fit for your future. Learn about things like how much money will you need, financial mistakes other people often make, and how you can avoid them. Plus, details on The Retirement Fitness Plan, a plan Ed personally created to help you get to and through retirement by focusing on five key areas of your financial life. Learn more about The Retirement Fitness Plan when you visit egsifinancial.com and click on Processes. Then subscribe, follow, and listen to The Retirement Trainer on Apple Podcasts, your iHeart app, or whichever podcast platform you prefer.
Steve, good morning. How are you?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
I am doing well, sir. Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Oh, looking forward to it. Thank you.
Absolutely. It's been a minute since we talked last, that's for sure. So welcome back.
Yeah, should be fun. A lot to discuss.
Boy, I'll tell you what. So many things to talk about. I think we're going to run out of time before we run out of topics.
We'll stay away from football and baseball.
All right. Well, that sounds like a plan. Well, all right. So I got to ask you, last time we talked, when your book came out and now you have the revision, right? Has your view changed of the economy since the election with the direction that we're heading? What are your thoughts on the new administration's take on and direction on where they want to go?
Well, there's a big fight now among congressional Republicans. I think the president's going to have to weigh in on it, is what do they take up? I think it's imperative that they renew the tax cuts of 2017 ASAP, so that uncertainty is not hanging in the air, and also add to them additional tax cuts. The president promised that doing something on tips, no tax on Social Security incomes, reducing the corporate rate, but also reducing the capital gains tax. That's a good twofer. One, it helps investment. But two, it instantly creates more revenue. Every time they reduce the rate, you get more revenue because people don't feel they're punished for realizing past gains. So it's a winner all around. And then even though so-called deficit hawks will squawk, they should also reduce the personal income tax rates. Reagan did it big time back in the 1980s, and it worked magnificently. So make it big. And they say, well, we have to do the border and other things. Well, you can chew gum and walk at the same time. One doesn't preclude the other. A lot of the border stuff, as you know, can be done with executive orders. Just Joe Biden opened the border by rescinding Donald Trump's executive orders and initiatives. Well, just put them back in as a starter. Well, then we take it from there. So I hope they don't postpone the tax cuts because you just don't know what's going to happen in the world. You just don't know what's going to might get in the way later in the year. And the Democrats would love to have those tax cuts expire and have the economy in bad shape going into the 2026 congressional elections. And we have to keep in mind of the Senate seats next year, 20 are Republican, 13 are Democrats. So we better have a strong economy. And the way you get that is by big tax cuts now, right away.
Absolutely. And you know, I agree completely. My fear is I had actually heard rumors that they were going to push it off to the second half of the year. I think that that should be implemented within the first 100 days.
Absolutely.
The sooner the better.
Absolutely. And the president's indicated he wants to put on some tariffs. Well, one of the things in the first term, the tariffs didn't come until after the tax cut of 2017. So you don't want to so you want to have big tax cuts in place. So any harm from the tariffs are overwhelmed by the tax cuts. So it's a timing issue as well. So the sooner, the better. And I just can't believe congressional Republicans just don't see the mistake that they made in the first Trump term by losing a year of the impact of tax cuts. So let's not make that mistake again.
Absolutely. So let me ask you this. I mean, where do you think there's been a lot of trial balloons floated, if you will, you know, as well as, you know, the corporate tax rate is going to go, and as well as long-term capital gains? I mean, what do you think is a good rate? I know what I have in my mind, but I'm just curious for you, you know, long-term capital gains, what should that be cut to? Should income thresholds have a lot to do with it as well? And then the personal tax rates, personal income tax.
Well, you said trial balloons. I live in New Jersey, where we have these strange objects in the sky that the White House assures us are figments of our imagination.
Yeah.
So weird. But I think it's just so symbolic of the misgovernment that we have, that something like this could go on and everyone in Washington pretends it's not happening. But to your question, right now, the federal tax on capital gains, which does not include state taxes, which some of which are horrific in places like New York and California, is right on the federal level at almost 24%, because you have the official 20% rate plus the 3.8% Obamacare tax that was tacked on years ago. So get rid of the Obamacare tax and then cut the rate back to a 15%, which we had once upon a time. That way, again, we get the best of both worlds. And on the, you mentioned tax thresholds, in addition to reducing rates, if they get a little squirmish on big rate cuts, substantially expand the brackets, the bands. So if I'm just picking a number, you go into a higher bracket at, say, 85,000, make it 125,000. So you do it, you can do it that way. And what they have to get rid of is this crazy scoring that the Congressional Budget Office and other scorers do on tax bills, which is just utterly unrelated to reality. And one of the dumb things they're doing is, as you know, the Trump tax cuts expire at the end of 2025. Mm-hmm. And these, I've got to curb my tongue, but these people in Washington, these people in Washington will count that as a $4.5 trillion tax cut. Even if it just keeps the status quo, they're counting it as a $4.5 trillion tax cut. What world are they living in? It's already there, been there for years. So how can you say it's suddenly a $4.5 trillion tax cut so they can justify a big tax increase? So all of these biases in Washington are against growth. It's part of the whole administrative state, deep state mentality. And again, attacking on all fronts, starting with taxes. So right now, the top federal income tax rate officially is 37, but then you have to add in the Medicare taxes and the other junk, which puts it up to around 40, 41. I cut 10 points, and they'll all howl, and they've cut through other brackets at 5 or 10 points. They'll all howl, oh, deficit. The only way you cure a deficit is with strong economic growth. And this administration, as you know, which is coming in, we've got Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy doing some very serious work. And one of the big things is not just cutting spending, but deregulation. Donald Trump glommed onto that in his first term. That's the equivalent of huge tax cuts. And that would be a great boon, just whacking away at those burdens, especially for small businesses.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, to your point, as far as Congress and talking about tax cuts, I mean, with the current tax code, it's already been proven. I mean, tax revenues are at all-time highs right now with reduced taxes. I mean, right. It really is counterintuitive. I hate when people say that because it's really not. It's just common sense, because you're encouraging people to have growth and grow the economy, which is going to generate more taxes in and of itself. But people just they can't see the forest through the trees.
The dirty little secret on that is, especially at the far left, they're not concerned about revenues and the things we look at. They want control.
It is control. That's what it is. It's all about control, the whole thing. Yep, I agree completely. So you brought up Doge. So let's talk about Doge real quick, because you touched on it. You know, deregulation, I think, is really going to spur on the economy, especially for small businesses, all of our clients, and even myself. Right. It's going to give us the ability to grow and expand and not have to worry, just like this new FinCEN, you know, regulation that small businesses have to file before the end of the year, you know, with penalties and everything else. It's just one thing after another. Right.
Yeah, I hope one of the things they do is get rid of that FinCEN thing right away and not fine people 250, you know, start whacking small businesses on that. Not what we need.
No, it's horrible. It's horrible. What avenues do you think Doge is going to take with Musk and, you know, Vivek with getting government workers back to work or giving them permanent furloughs, if you will, and moving, decentralizing DC? What do you think is the best avenue to do that? And how long do you think it's going to take?
Well, I think knowing Elon Musk, who's a superman who manages already oversees six companies, including a rocket ship company, the SpaceX, that is the best rocket technology in the world. Thank God he's on our side, because he's better than NASA, better than China, better than Russia and India or anybody else. So I think they will move on all fronts. And he knows how, and Vivek, I'm sure, too, is young, so he can apply some energy here, riding herd on things. And the nice thing about Doge is precisely because it isn't a government department formally, they can have informal, they can bring in volunteers. And one of the treasure troves they're going to find are all these IG reports, inspector general reports, that cabinet departments have that really do really some gold nuggets in there in terms of how there's mismanagement, grants not being properly audited and things like that. So again, it's stop the EV junk from the EPA. That'll be a fight. But the thing is, you move on all fronts, and it's not necessarily an axe. It's the scalpel, just each and every day here and there and just going at it. And the nice thing about Musk is he has the public authority, so to speak, unlike these past commissions on trying to cut spending, that if he proposes something, it will get publicity. It will get the whole social media publicizing these things. And it's going to be harder and harder for the state to defend these things or hope they can use the Iron Triangle to strangle these things. And one of the things I hope they do is maybe do what they did with those base closing commissions going back to the 1980s.
Yeah.
You get a group, you identify ones that outlived their usefulness, but politically you couldn't touch them because the local congressperson would object. So you put a group together and have an up and down vote in the House and in the Senate, no amendments, up or down. And they did it five times and cut around $30 billion, which accumulates over time. So doing those kinds of things, whack here, whack there, over time, it adds up to real money.
It really does. It really does. And to your point, you know, earlier you're talking about it. It seems like Congress, the bureaucratic state, right? As Vivek said, that's the fourth branch of government. It either has to be this or this. And people don't realize that two things or multiple things can be true at the exact same time. So I do like the idea of moving on multiple fronts all at the same time and not waiting. And that is my biggest fear, is that we continue to kick the can down the road. And before we know it, we're into to 2026 and the election's right around the corner. And we haven't really gone to taking that next step to where we really need to be and get the
economy. Because one of the dangers is, especially with all this climate boondoggle money, hundreds and hundreds of billions in spending and tax credits, is that once you start shoveling that money out, very hard to stop those programs. We saw that with ethanol. Once there, it takes on a life of its own, like kudzu, just bamboo, just grows and grows and grows. So we got to stop these things now before they sink real roots. And already a few weeks ago, a number of House Republicans were saying, oh, don't do this, cut this green thing or that green thing. I got to go right away. Again, Trump has the authority now, the best it's ever been, but it doesn't last forever in the political world. So do it while, as they say, the iron is hot. Get as much of that stuff as you can.
Yeah. And typically when we see a sweep all the way across the quote unquote mandate, you have a lot of political capital on the front end. And so you really have to make use of it as soon as possible. And I agree with that, too. But we even have more momentum where people are reaching across the aisles, especially business owners from Meta, Amazon, Bezos. Everyone is.
How do you like that?
Yeah, boy, I'll tell you, it's completely changed.
What a sight to see Bezos, Jeff Bezos, and Zuckerberg contributing $1 million each to the inauguration.
The inauguration. Boy,
what a delicious sight.
It is crazy. And I think it would be a shame, a mistake, to not take advantage of all this momentum. Because if we don't, we could lose it as quick as we got it. Do you think with cutting back government spending, as DOGE kicks in, because the government spending is really what's been propping up the economy over the last couple of years.
Right.
You know, how hard of a hit do you think that's going to have on the economy? I think it will be, but a short period of time, as long as we do it right. But, you know, how much of an impact do you think it's going to have on the economy and the markets?
Not very much when we remind ourselves, where does government get the money? They make it sound like it's like you won the lottery in Washington, and so they can take the money, found money. No, they get it from we the people. Government does not create resources. Government takes resources, redistributes resources. So in terms of government spending, certainly these boondoggles will feel the hit. Departments hopefully will feel the hit, but the American people, I don't think, will. And that, again, gets to a tax cut. So people see right away things are going to get better. It's already being baked in. And that gives you the political capital to do some tough things down the road when people see you're delivering also on the good things. And so it's just not eating the spinach, as they used to say, or castor oil or whatever. You're having some nice milkshakes in between.
Stop and smell the roses and enjoy them along the way, right? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right. So the national debt, we talked about this last time. It's over $36 trillion. Trump did spend a lot, added to the deficit in his first term. I think he's taken a step back and looking at his policies going forward. What do you think needs to happen in order to not just reduce government spending, but to reduce the national debt? Because we can't keep going at this pace. We can't keep growing it. We have to reduce it.
Well, once upon a time, back in the 1990s, after the Cold War, we had a period of time where we actually had budget surpluses. And once you get a surplus and a strong economy, then you have the accumulative momentum, compounding momentum. And even on defense, we have to increase our defense because we live in a very dangerous world. But there's a lot that can be done there on the procurement side where we get more for less. Where we, instead of the, as you know, in Defense Department, it's EROM's law, which is Moore spelled backwards. You know, Moore's law was doubling the chip in 15 months. There, it's almost doubling the amount of time to get a weapons system off the ground. And so they have these huge delays. They take forever. And there's a lot of fast-paced technology. And this is where I think Musk will be able to make a contribution. Contrast SpaceX with what happened to Boeing, which was mired in Defense Department procurement, see what that did. So I think that on the national debt, if people see that it's just not just spiraling out of control, but that we are fundamentally changing the whole environment and assets are growing faster than liabilities, then we'll take care of it.
And I agree completely. I also think not just becoming energy independent again, but becoming a net positive exporter. I think that's going to not only strengthen the U.S. dollar and preserve the dollar as the reserve currency, but I think if we do it the right way with tariffs and everything else, that we can use that to help reduce our national debt. What do you think about that?
One of the things I think they'll do, there's so much they have to do. Day one, Trump's not going to get sleep for the first 3 or 4 days he's in power. All the things he's going to be signing, but rescinding Joe Biden's crazy ban on LNG facilities to export natural gas. We have, more gas than anyone in the world. Mm-hmm. And this administration has done everything they could to stop it, not to mention oil. And they say, well, drilling oil output went up. Well, that was on private lands. But as we saw from their day one with what they did to the Keystone Pipeline, they did everything they could to throttle the infrastructure. So it's one thing to say, oh, yeah, you can drill, but if you can't move it, you've throttled it. So removing those barriers, people then make decisions. And then Anwar in Alaska, we'll open that up again.
Didn't they stop oil leases, renewing oil leases? And
Yeah, that's right.
I forgot all about that until you just said that. That's right.
Yeah. And, Anwar, they try to make it look like it's this, romping place with bears and cuddly animals playing and Big Bad Oil. You go there. Most of it's, I've been there, mosquito infested, desolate area. The oil company's long shown there's a little footprint to get the needed oil. So when you see those pictures of elk and everything like that, cuddly bears, just know that is a falsehood. So open up ANWR. And I think Trump will do that right away. He mentioned it several times during the campaign.
So let's, touching on your book, Inflation, I mean, that's kind of a big deal. We're seeing the Fed's continuing to lower rates, this 2% target. Inflation is coming down. Well, it's not, inflation isn't coming down. It's the rate of growth that's coming down.
Yes.
So that's the misnomer, right? That's the disconnect. It's messaging.
Egg prices did not come down the last 2 years in the supermarket.
Right, right. Actually, they continue to go up. So why do you think that there is such a disconnect? I have my theories, but why do you think there's a disconnect as the Feds continue to lower their rates, bond yields have continued to rise?
Is it because the
capital markets are saying, hey, inflation is still here and it's not going away anytime soon?
I think the capital markets, whether they know it or not, and implicitly recognize the Fed doesn't know what it's doing on inflation. All the Fed operations are based on the flawed theory that prosperity causes inflation. And so therefore, when the economy starts to do well, oh, we must slow it down because we're going to have rising prices and inflation. It's called the Phillips curve, which posits that if you want low inflation, you have to have higher unemployment. If you want lower unemployment, you have to have higher inflation. It's a bogus theory. Real world shows continuously that it's false, but it's still wholly read at the Fed and at other central banks. The real way you cure monetary inflation is monetary inflation, as we point out in the book, the definition is very simple, lowering the value of your currency, usually by creating too much of it. And so you stabilize the dollar, but not one central banker in the world talks about stabilizing a currency. You know, money measures value. That's what it's like, a clock that measures time, or a scale that measures weight, or a ruler that measures distance. Money measures value. And when you corrupt that measure, would be like changing the number of minutes in the hour each day, it discombobulates and screws up the market. It's like putting a virus in your computer. The information you get isn't reliable. Prices are supposed to tell us what is dear, what people want, and what they don't want. And critical information, billions of times a day. And so they have to let supply and demand determine prices. But in the meantime, make sure the measurement is fairly stable. But they never do that. So I think a big fight is coming with the Federal Reserve, and the media will portray it as, oh, they're going after the independents. No, they're going to examine the models on which the Fed has been operating, which has been destructive. The only real question is, how much damage do they do? And one other thing, why do we accept the Federal Reserve trying to manipulate interest rates? That is a form of rent control. We know rent control in real estate doesn't work. Doesn't work in the real world either. They used to call borrowing money, some people would call it renting the money. Mm-hmm. And so instead of an apartment, you're renting the money. And the interest is the rent you're paying to use the money. So where do we get this thing that they can practice a monetary version of rent control? And 11 people or 12 people on the so-called open market committee determines what 331 million Americans do. So it needs a real basic examination. And where did they get that 2% number? They just pulled it out of, just pull out of thin air. And so stop the manipulation of interest rates, go for a stable dollar, and just be around if there's a panic because of a war or something like that, and leave it alone. Somebody the other day pointed out that research shows that Federal Reserve PhD economists would actually make great Uber drivers.
Well, you know, based on that, did you see Janet Yellen's interview? Or I think it was earlier this week. Maybe it was the end of last week. It's everything kind of blends together anymore. But she admitted that they made a mistake on inflation being transitory. They made a mistake on inflation now and how they've been treating it. So I wonder if Powell is going to have that same epiphany, you know, at some point in time where he says, you know what we're doing is wrong. It's not working. And maybe we have to make it change. Or is that just just wishful thinking.
I think the institution has obviously gotten control of Mr. Powell. Remember those movies, Pod People, coming from outer space and taking you over? I think the Fed Pod People have taken over or Powell, so I don't foresee any epiphanies there. So I hope that when Powell is replaced, they appoint somebody like David Malpass, who is former Treasury official, renowned economist, former head of the World Bank, and he knows the Fed. And he, from day one, now you would see a huge difference in the way the Fed is run.
So, all right, we're talking about stabilizing the dollar, and that's a big deal, right? Instead of inflating it. So what would you do to stabilize the dollar? What do you think the first thing we should do is? And, you know, should we go back to the gold standard? I mean, what is the best avenue to do that now and going forward?
Well, one thing is to announce that in the future, instead of trying to manipulate the economy, is that dollar stability is going to be the goal. So the whole mentality, there's going to be a change, the whole approach. And if the economy is doing well, we're not going to hear talk about the economy overheating. You know, after all, if your income goes up, do you start to overheat? Do you start to sweat at night that you're overheating because your bank balance is higher? Don't think so. So I think you're going to see change. So you announce it. And then you get a debate. What's the best way to do it? The best way, which, of course, makes economists choke, like waving garlic in front of a vampire, is the gold standard. So we're not going to go to the gold standard right away. There's so much myth about it. We discuss it in our book, Inflation. But the thing is, you say, well, let's do what we did partially in the late 80s, 1990s. Greenspan, Alan Greenspan, then the head of the Fed, said he looked at the gold price, didn't have a gold standard, but he looked to see if things are all right. He looked at commodity, broad commodity indexes, which are often susceptible if there's too much money. Commodity prices suddenly start to go up. And so you use the what you might call a sloppy gold standard, looking at commodity prices and gold, but with the emphasis on we're trying to make the dollar stable, like a clock or a scale and ruler and take it from there. And I think market participants would be profoundly relieved that the Fed's not going to try to gum up the economy by either printing too much money or trying to slow the economy down. I remember, I'm old enough to remember in the 80s, when the early 80s, when the Reagan tax cuts took full effect in 83 and 84, Volcker had stopped the deflation. So you had semi-dollar stability, and the economy grew at an 8% rate for about a year and a half, 2 years. And the Federal Reserve was yammering about, oh, is this too fast? Maybe we should slow it down. No, stop it.
All right. So I'm going to ask this. It's about Bitcoin, because I know the new administration, Trump especially, is kind of high on cryptos. But I had heard yesterday that he made a comment, and I was trying to look it up right before we started talking, but he made a comment. I'm not going to get it exactly right, so don't quote me on this. Something along the lines of Bitcoin could be some type of reserve currency or something along those lines. So I guess my question for you is, what are your thoughts on Bitcoin? And do you think that that's even a possibility? And should we be going down that road of I don't like the digital dollar, but Bitcoin along those lines? I'm not sure exactly how I feel about that.
Well, Bitcoin and most of the cryptos are very volatile in value. Mm-hmm. And money has to be stable in value, as we've been discussing. So it's not money. So if you want to see it as a sort of an insurance policy, we have to remember Bitcoin was invented as a high-tech cry for help. Now, back in 2007, 2008, as the governments were continuing to misbehave in managing their money. But it's not money per se. Imagine if 2 years ago you had taken out a mortgage in Bitcoin, say for $300,000, you'd owe the bank today $10 million on the mortgage.
Wow. You know what? That's a great way of thinking about it.
So it's not a currency. They'll invent a crypto that could be a rival to the dollar, that it is tied to gold or something like that, easy to use for contracts and transactions, but we're not there yet. So in terms of reserves, I'll stick to gold for now. It's been pretty good for 4,000 years. And Bitcoin, if you want as a private person to have that as part of your portfolio as insurance against the stupidities around you. Mm-hmm. And also, it's been very good for transferring funds quickly that the government can't get their paws on. So when you have a hyperinflation like they had until recently in Argentina, you could use a Bitcoin to get help there, and the government couldn't steal it from the bank.
Well, that's true, too.
And you hit on something very important, by the way, and that is you don't want central banks issuing digital currency, because that's a form of tyranny, seeing they would be able to see everything you do.
Well, I mean, China's been doing that since the early 2000s, right? And they're
China loves that kind of control.
Well, look at our neighbors.
China loves that.
See what they did with the truckers. They were able to shut down their bank accounts. That is a form of tyranny, ultimate control, and you lose control of your own assets. And at that point, I believe they're really not yours. They belong to the government. So those are just my independent thoughts. But
yeah, so the government feels everything is theirs, and anything you have is their beneficence.
Theirs is theirs, and what's ours is theirs, right?
Yeah. Or their version of a flat tax. Line one, what did you make? Line two, send it in.
Send it in. That's right. So I have to ask this question, Steve. Are you taking any kind of position, consulting or otherwise, in this administration going forward, or even as an advisor in any way, shape, or form?
I think my role is an agitator and outside agitator. And so, yes, I send them and we get views through, either in public, and oftentimes to get something done, you got to do it from the outside. Mm-hmm. And then they say, maybe this isn't a great idea to postpone tax cuts till the fall. No.
I absolutely agree. I absolutely agree. What would be the number one thing that you would do on day one? If you were president taking the oath of office, what is it that you would do? Say, what would be the first order, whether it's executive, whatever it is, what would be the first thing?
Well, I think it's going to be a big fat folder in front of you, starting things like the liquefied natural gas, removing some of these energy things, reinstating sensible things that Biden undid to start to get control of the border, and then bring in the heads of the Finance Committee in the Senate and the Ways and Means Committee in the House and say, here are some ideas on a big fat tax cut. Let's have it on the floor in 72 hours. They won't have it in 72 hours. They're not used to working like that. But push for the tax cut. And then you don't have to do everything on day one, but just starting to whack away at these crazy regs. And to make it very clear, you're not going to have to buy an EV. You don't have to get rid of your gas stove. You can have a dishwasher in the future that actually works instead of all the stuff they put on the technology that makes the things, 3 hours to do what 1 hour could have done in the past. Mm-hmm. Just whack away. Now, the other side, the empire is going to strike back. But this time, we know what they are. We know the importance. And one of the good things I think the administration is doing, I think they're doing this, is realizing it's not just the headline cabinet secretaries and all that kind of stuff. It's the assistant deputy secretary going down in the several levels in the bureaucracy, where it's very important to have people there who won't be blocking what the top is trying to do. And I think they've got personnel ready for that, young people who want to do something. So they've learned, I think, from the first term, personnel is policy. So you better get the personnel in there ASAP.
So do you see a difference between his second term, Trump's second term, versus the first term and how he's getting ready to start? It seems like he already has everything lined up and it looks like he's going to hit the ground running, whereas maybe in the first term, not so much.
Do you think? Yeah. And the first term won. I think they were kind of surprised that they won in the sense they didn't have the kind of infrastructure ready to make the changes. And they'll tell you today their big mistake was not firing every political appointee from the previous administration. There are other people on hand who can turn the lights on and off. You don't need these holdovers who ended up doing their darndest to block your agenda, especially in the DOJ, Department of Justice. So I think they've learned that. Sweep them out. Have your own team ready to go in. And that's why he's just going rat-a-tat-tat, starting with the top, but then making sure the people are there inside who can be ready from day one to fight these battles.
What do you think of the new Treasury Secretary, Steve Bissent?
He seems fine. He has the right experience. So he knows the financial markets, which is very important. I think when you have that kind of knowledge, you can get things done. That somebody coming in fresh, trying to learn where the restroom is, it just is a delay. So I don't think it'll be a delay with him taking over Treasury. And I'm glad Kevin Hassett, who worked for Trump in the first term, with the Council of Economic Advisors, taking over Larry's old position at the National Economic Council, critical. Kevin taking over that. So you have somebody vastly experienced on personnel, knows how to work with President Trump. So all that's to the good.
Well, fantastic. Steve, I know we're on a tight time schedule, so I really appreciate your time this morning. I look forward to talking with you again soon. I always learn stuff, and it's been great talking with you.
Good to talk to you. Thank you. And keep up the good fight. It's going to be a long march, as Mao said.
It will. It will. Absolutely. Well, listen, I wish you a Merry Christmas and a happy, blessed, and prosperous New Year.
Yes. And I'll say the forbidden words. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Absolutely.
Happy New Year.
All right. Good. You take care. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You tested your fitness level, not your workout routine. I'm talking about your financial endurance, because if saving to a 401k is the extent of your effort, it is time for you to start shaping up. And Ed Sedell is here to help you do that with The Retirement Trainer. It's his podcast to help you examine your financial stamina and learn the questions you should be asking and areas to focus on to help you get to that place you've been working so hard for, a happy, comfortable retirement. And it's not as hard as some might have made you believe. Ed's broken it down into 5 simple steps. It's the retirement fitness plan, which he personally created to help clarify key areas of your financial life. Learn more about the retirement fitness plan at egsifinancial.com. Then subscribe, follow, and listen to The Retirement Trainer on Apple Podcasts, your iHeart app, or whichever podcast platform you prefer. Investment advisory services offered through EGSI Investment Management, DBA EGSI Financial Group, a registered investment advisor. Insurance and annuities offered through EGSI Financial Services, Inc., Ohio license number 102-06. 619.